Well, Numbers 23, what's going on here with Balak and Balaam? Well, Balaam knows, because he does have some connection with Yahweh, that whoever curses God's people shall be cursed. And Balak comes to Balaam and basically offers him loads of money if he will curse Israel. And Balaam so loves materialism that despite risking being absolutely cursed by God, he still by all means wants to somehow curse Israel. So he sets Balak up to make altars, offer sacrifices, and then Balaam says, I'm just going to go and meet with Yahweh. And he walks off. They do this up in the mountains overlooking Israel's encampment. And Balaam leaves Balak by the altars, and then he just says, oh, I'm just going to wander up the mountain and meet with Yahweh, see what he says. And he obviously was going to, he intended to fake a meeting with God and to come back to Balak and say, oh, yeah, now I can curse Israel. Yep, I met with Yahweh up the mountain just like Moses did, and yep, I'm going to curse Israel. So he wanders off, and he does actually meet God. He meets an angel, and he's overtaken then by the Spirit of God, and he walks back to Balak, who's all eager for him to curse Israel, and he's zapped by the Spirit of God, and he comes out with blessings upon Israel. This is similar, I suggest, to what happened in 1 Samuel 28 with the witch at Endor. She'd been intending to give Saul some general message, purportedly from Samuel, but from her own device. And then she screams in genuine fright when Samuel himself is actually resurrected. So I think it was the same thing. And his sort of bumping into the angel, as it were, in the case of Balaam, was, of course, what had happened when he was on the way to Balak and the angel had stood in his way. So he's pretty awful, really, Balaam. And, you know, eventually I think he tries to get around it when all this is finished by saying to Balak, well, basically, God's not going to curse his people because he so loves them. But look, let's make his people really hurt him. And then I reckon he really will curse them. And that's why he sets them up to commit fornication and to commit idolatry. And he really was just obsessed with immediate material benefit. And this is a solemn warning, because New Testament says that he ran headlong after reward. And there are people all around us who are doing the same, who are absolutely obsessed with wealth. And no matter all the red lights that God puts in their path, they just rush headlong through those red lights. This is the power of the attraction of wealth and money. And it's a sober warning to us. Well, he comes back from this genuine encounter with Yahweh. And he says in verse 21, God has not seen iniquity in Jacob, nor has he seen perverseness in Israel. Yahweh his God is with him. The shout of a king is among them. So he has been, as it were, zapped by the Spirit of God. And he's being made to bless the people again. Well, in Deuteronomy 23, verse 5, in reflection upon this incident, we're told that that Balaam's prayer to God was not heard. Yahweh, your God, wouldn't listen to Balaam. Well, did he actually pray to Yahweh, oh, Yahweh, please curse this people so that I can get rich? I don't think so. I think that is an example of where our unspoken words, our deepest inner desire, is read by God as if it is a prayer. And I think that that is what happened here. And it's a comfort in a way. That's why in Romans 8 we're told that we know not what or how to pray for as we ought, but the Spirit makes intercession for us with groanings that cannot be uttered. And the Lord Jesus there is called the Spirit, which is one of his titles, 2 Corinthians 3, the Lord the Spirit. He's called that because he looks into human hearts, or the human spirit, and on that basis relays that to God. So don't worry if you can't verbalize very well That doesn't mean that you're not very good at praying, you're not a good prayer, because God is looking at your innermost heart, and that is what he did more negatively with Balaam. And that's why Yahweh, your God, wouldn't listen to Balaam. Even though he didn't presumably pray to Yahweh in so many words, please curse this people, his desire to do that was understood as a prayer. Like Elijah, the New Testament says he made intercession to God against Israel when he said, "I only am left." Well, he didn't specifically pray against Israel or intercede with God to destroy Israel, but that was the implication of him saying, "I'm the only one that's left, they're all apostate." Anyway, he comes back with this blessing, and he says, "God has not seen iniquity in Jacob, nor perverseness in Israel." Well, really, perverseness is a form of the word for Jacob. God has not seen the Jacob in Israel. Now, Jacob had indeed a lot of iniquity in him, I mean the historical Jacob. And yet, God had changed that name to Israel, and he's saying here, God is saying here, that he doesn't see that Jacob in Israel. He imputed righteousness to them when they crossed the Red Sea, just as he does to us when we're baptized. Ezekiel 20 says that they took with them the gods of Egypt. They took them through the Red Sea. Acts 7:43, they carried the tabernacle of Moloch with them, as well as that of Yahweh. They carried the star of their god Remphan, as well as the ensigns of the tribes. Well, God didn't see that. But what does that mean? I don't think it means that love is blind, or that God turned a blind eye. To see, for God to see, means to take account of. When Hagar says, "You God, see me," she means, not physically so much, but you provide for me. And the Hebrew idea is there within this sense of to see a resting place for Israel in the wilderness. It means to provide it for them. So then God did not count the perverseness, the Jacob that was in Israel, to Israel. And this really is a comfort to us when we struggle with our belief and faith and trust in the fact that God counts me as righteous when I am not. And then you think of how, although God suffered their manners 40 years in the wilderness, it hurt him, as Psalm 95:10 says, he also saw them, in Jeremiah 2, as a beautiful young woman. Ezekiel 16, likewise. He saw them as a beautiful young woman whom he fell in love with. And yet love is not blind. So he didn't see the iniquity, the Jacob, the perverseness in Israel, not in that he turned a blind eye, which would in that sense not be legitimate, but because love by its nature counts righteousness to people. Part of being in love is to see the beloved in exalted terms. Now, that is not to say that love is blind. It is not to say that the weak side or whatever is not noticed. It is, but it is seen in a different way. And this is exactly how God looks at us. This is the wonder of being clothed in white raiment, in being spotless, as Jude says, in his sight, in his eyes, in his opinion. And the way that God's eyes, as it were, did not see, did not count the Jacobness, the perversity within Israel, and he renamed Jacob as Israel, is all there to comfort and encourage us.